With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Game four tonight, Yankee Stadium.
I'm assuming so. I should look at my weather app and make sure that... make sure that we've come to a truce with Mother Nature up there. No, it looks okay. It looks looks windy. The emoji that is prevalent hour by hour in my weather app now, Seth Payne, is the one with three curly horizontal lines, which directly translated means windy in New York. It's going to be a lot of wind until 7 p.m. tonight up there, to where it looks like it's just cloudy and the wind dies down.
It's in football, wind is actually worse than rain for a quarterback.
Really?
Yeah, it's it blows it all over the
Does it
mess hell over
with the ball?
Place.
Like,
yeah,
even with a quarterback, you know, with a rocket where, arm can't
now,
pierce a little
now,
wind.
One thing I've noticed, because I'll watch it with Tom Brady, because they get this forecast enough times in that area of the country, mm-hmm. Wintry mix. If I did an analytical study on this, I bet wintry mix is the worst possible weather condition, because that's like freezing rain. It's right or hovering around 32, so the might be super cold water hitting, and it turns into ice immediately. That creates bad footing and poor grip on the football. And then I think it's usually mixed with wind, too. So wintry mix is the worst. Now, very few baseball games are played in a wintry mix.
It's also the worst to drive in, too. I hate driving in the wintry mix, because when the wintry mix freezes, you're all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is probably a topic that's not connecting with a lot of our audience.
No, it is. It is because it's kind of the same as having like the overpass ice when it's...
There you go.
These overpasses are kind of terrifying sometimes in Houston when it gets cold out.
So the odds are, if this thing... Let's pretend for a second that this thing goes seven games. I think the odds are right now, if this thing goes seven games, AJ Hinch has already announced that it's going to be Zach Greinke game four, Justin Verlander game five. Nothing's been announced for game six and seven because they don't exist right now. But I think, you tell me, Seth, I think if the Astros are leading 3-2, you go bullpen game in six and you go Cole full rest on seven. If they're trailing 3-2, if they happen to lose both of these next two games, which is crazy to think about considering Verlander's pitching in one of them, but it could happen. They needed extra innings to win Verlander's start the other night. If they're trailing 3-2, my guess is it's Cole on short rest in game six, and then you just piece together what you can. Then it's all hands on deck in game seven.
Look, a lot of it depends on how many of the relievers they use in games three, four, five, and six. Four and five. But you're going into six and seven to where the relievers are going to have to play four straight games. Yeah, I think you go with the odds there, which are, A, hey, we're talking about these bullpen games. Like, I feel like we're putting the Astros more of an underdog in the bullpen games as we should be. It just feels like that. I think some people are talking about the bullpen game like it's, oh no, the bullpen game. Oh no, the Yankees have a better bullpen, so you can't possibly... You can win the bullpen game.
Well, you've brought
especially if Urquidy ends up having a good day, which he's had plenty of good days.
Yeah, you've brought that up a couple times in the last couple days, and I think it's a great point, which is... The Astros bullpen game could just be an Urquidy start,
right,
masked with the label bullpen game.
So Urquidy doesn't necessarily have to feel that much pressure.
Right. Why would you take out Urquidy, who has pitched into the fifth and sixth inning multiple times in the second half of the season? If he's pitching well and you're three innings in, you're not just going to bring in Brad Peacock for the sake of bringing in Brad Peacock.
I think it's almost, it might be AJ Hinch psychological warfare that he's even calling it a bullpen day.
Yeah.
It puts a whole lot less pressure on Urquidy if he just calls it a bullpen day and Urquidy's going to go out there. Maybe even to make it even easier on Urquidy, they actually use an opener. And you've got so many options. Peacock, I know people are saying Peacock can go a few innings. He's got that nerve damage. I'm not going to tempt fate that all of a sudden in Peacock's third inning, his nerve flares up again.
You're saying
something.
In terms of counting on him or even using him at all?
No, I would use him, but I'm not going to use him heavily. Like, if Peacock's out there looking great, I'm not going to use him heavily. I'm not going to lean on him to go long. He's a nice option to have.
Gotcha.
So, but I'm saying, but maybe open up with somebody and then bring Urquidy in to take even more pressure off of him. So it's a bullpen day technically, but you get 4 or 5 innings out of him.
Do you agree with the strategy to use Verlander in Game 5, or would you rather Verlander? I mean, he's on full rest.
Yeah, why wouldn't I?
I don't know. I guess just to – you got Verlander and Cole pitching. I guess we need to wait and see what the Yankees are doing in Game 5 first. They haven't announced what they're doing yet. Yeah. If you were to even –
the opponent doesn't matter to me.
Okay.
No, you're going to use him as fast. But you want to win as many games as possible in a short amount of time
as
possible.
I'm being too cute, but
you're entertaining it. You're thinking too hard about that. That's when you want to have your cake and eat it too. Like, oh, the perfect way to win this thing. Yeah. Now, the perfect way to win it is to win the next game and then win the next game after that.
I got you. You know who I blame for even bringing that up?
Who?
Tim Kirkchin.
Oh, really?
He brought up something like that on SportsCenter this morning, and I was sort of half listening. He's like, yeah, here's the thing about if you pitch Verlander, if Greinke gives you what you want in Game 4, and you've got the luxury now of a 3-1 lead, and he made some explanation why you would use a bullpen start. Then you got Verlander and Cole lined up heavy favorites in Game 6 and 7 at home.
No, but if it's a 3-1...
That's why baseball is the greatest sport on earth.
Right, but if it's a 3-1 lead, then you also are thinking about, okay, it's a 3-1 lead, use the bullpen day, then it sets you up well for the World Series. That you'd have
that may have been his
explanation. That's probably the point. See, because I'm so focused on the Yankees that I keep
too,
forgetting
dude.
About
you and I need to get out of this mindset.
Well, because you don't want to fall into the trap of thinking too far ahead,
whatever,
to where you
screw that.
You don't cut off your it's nose Astros, to spite your man. Face. So, like, you don't want to think so much about the World Series that you start making decisions that affect your chance of winning this one.
Seth, you disappoint me. Scared money don't make money. Man. You set up for the World Series is what
so
you do.
If they're up 3-1, would I go with the bullpen day there, because then the chances are if you win that. But then, all right.
Yes, that
devil's
was
devil's advocate, though. Okay, the downside is you don't win the bullpen day because you have less of a chance of winning a bullpen day than you have of a Verlander start. You don't win the bullpen day. And now you're going to have to use Verlander anyway when you could have won it the day before with Verlander and then he'd have an extra day of rest. It's 6-1, half dozen of the other. Not to mention all those relievers that you used in Game 5 would be rested and hadn't been used if you used Verlander in Game 5.
Yeah. We're probably down a rabbit hole for radio purposes.
Yeah, you're doing Verlander in Game 5.
Okay.
You're using Verlander in Game 5. Because there's a chance you'd have to use him in Game 6 anyway, and then you've got him
for
potentially one less game in the World Series.
So I think that was Kirkchin's explanation. I just get to... When Kirkchin's explaining anything, I lose... My mind wanders after like 10 seconds because I just get distracted by his voice, his dorkiness. And supposedly he's a great dude, like a really good guy, and supposedly very good at pickup basketball.
Who's your favorite baseball nerd? I like Rosenthal just because of his bow tie, I think.
I like Rosenthal because he breaks news, too.
What about Buster Olney?
Is he a little too full of himself? A grown man named Buster. I guess that's where I'm at with that.
Without a Buster attitude, either. Yeah, he doesn't feel like a Buster.
And I think his real name, if he were covering up a name where you're like, okay, I could see why you were called Buster because your regular first name is, you know, whatever. I'm going to see what his real first name is, but it's always kind of, and plus he doesn't look like a Buster. Like Buster Douglas looked like a Buster. Like he's this big, huge dude who is going to bust you in the mouth.
Yeah.
Buster Olney's real name is Robert. If your name is Robert and you go
how
by
come
Buster,
up with Buster, yeah.
I don't know.
That just comes from,
now I'm going to feel,
you know what,
it's probably some uncle that passed away or something.
I always
something.
Felt like Chipper Jones didn't look like a Chipper either. Chipper was more of a redneck, right? I associate Chipper with kind of like golf club dude or something, or prep school guy.
No, but Chipper,
isn't that more of a prep school type of name?
But his first name is Larry.
Yeah, but
Larry,
you know what I'm saying?
Wayne,
like Chipper,
Jones.
Like, but Chipper Jones, he just never seemed like a Chipper to me.
No. Okay. No. I'm with you on that. So Buster Olney, so my favorite baseball dork, is that your question?
Yeah.
There? It's probably Ken Rosenthal because he breaks news.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Who's your favorite former player that does baseball stuff? Are you okay with the Fox Studio show? I know you were not okay with several of the Fox broadcast teams throughout the early portions of the playoffs.
I like, let's see. Well, I like Frank Thomas. And even though he doesn't necessarily bring a whole lot to the table, Frank Thomas said something the other day that was the choke. Choke something and pray for smoke. It was
choke, poke, and hope.
Choke, poke,
choke
and
it,
hope. Yeah,
poke it and hope.
Choke, poke, and hope. Yeah, and I like that. That caught on to me. That I want to say, My gut honestly tells me A-Rod. I'm just fighting it so hard. I don't want to like A-Rod. I really don't want to. Even as I watch him, I'm like, why am I liking you? Like, you annoy me. And at the same time, I enjoy seeing him on television.
Do you think you enjoy seeing him or you enjoy his analysis?
I just enjoy, like, when I see him on television, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to like this. He does it. You know what? He does his homework, but he does it in a way where he relates it on a very... He makes it very relatable. He doesn't get overly technical about things. For a guy that I know is very technically smart about things, he does a pretty good job of doing it layman's terms.
Oh, the time he got most technical is when he started talking about the math of an even run lead.
Yeah, but
that was brutal.
But even that, in some sense, because for those of you that didn't hear it, you're lucky as hell, because he was trying to explain how an even lead was better than an odd lead.
Right.
That somehow a 2-run lead was better than a 3-run lead.
Right.
And he had an explanation for it and everything, and it didn't... It still doesn't make sense. I wasted too many hours thinking about how it might possibly make sense.
I didn't mean to bring it up.
But that was almost like a Yogi Berra type thing,
yeah,
where it's endearing that it made no sense at all.
Do you like Big Poppy?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I just like Big Poppy.
Yeah.
I don't even care what he says.
He does, like, even though I know he puts zero thought into it, I like it when he picks the Astros. I make it feels like it means something, even though I think more times than not when he's picked the Astros, it hasn't worked out for them.
He said something the other night, though, about the Astros that was completely false. This is why I know I like Big Poppy, is I kind of just let that go. Whereas with like 98% of the other announcers,
yeah,
I would have been on Twitter like, oh, I can't. Like when Gus Johnson mispronounced Jose Altuve, God, I treated him like he committed assault or something. I was over the top bad about it. Poppy said that, you know, the thing about the Astros is the farm. Since they won that World Series, they continue to build through the farm and build through the farm. I'm like, no, they don't.
He's doing
they've
one
made
of those,
these gigantic trades and free agent signings.
He's sometimes you can tell when guys are kind of relying on the
generalities,
stuff they knew 2 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, look, he's been through. Yeah, Big Poppy's been. Well,
that's when I felt bad.
Yeah.
You know what you were just going to say? Some people pointed out, because I put the video of it up, and people point out to me, like, Sean, you realize he was almost dead like a month ago.
Well, was he? Yeah, and how did it line up with the Greinke trade? When did that happen? The Greinke trade might have been right around the time he got shot, actually. So
up until the time he got shot, that may have been a true statement.
Forgive him for not understanding the details of the Greinke trade. He was otherwise occupied. Occupado.
The last memory he has is Yordan Alvarez getting called up from AAA. The farm.
What if it happened like right at the trade deadline? So he's like, oh, what a boring. We'll be able to tell. He might say something about the boring trade deadline or something.
Right.
When he's on air.
Ugh. Payne and Pendergast. That's Seth Payne. I am Sean Pendergast.
I'm getting annoyed now.
Why?
I've been there irritable the last couple days. I don't know why. People have pointed it out. But I had mentioned that I liked when Frank Thomas said choke, poke, and hope in the pregame the other day.
What was wrong with that?
I got multiple people correcting me saying, no, Big Poppy said that. No, and yeah. I didn't realize this. Big Poppy did say it in the postgame.
That's when I saw it.
But Frank Thomas had said it in the pregame. Maybe it was on separate days or something, but they were both
using
it.
It was the same day. Yeah,
so
it was
Frank
the same
Thomas
day.
Said it in the pregame, and then Big Poppy said it in the postgame.
Yeah,
nobody's being a jerk about it, but I got corrected by like 15 people, so I feel
that's
like
good.
I have to bring it up, because that means that there were 150 people on their cars that thought the same thing.
That means these people are listening. I'm cool with it.
And that. I don't want them to think that I'm just thinking, you know, like, oh, Poppy Ortiz, whatever. I can't, you know, yeah.
You don't want them to think that you think, oh, Frank Thomas and David Ortiz, they may as well be the same guy.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't want that to happen.
Right. No, that's...
I saw Frank Thomas specifically do it. He had the bat in his hands and everything.
He was, yeah. And then Poppy was doing it kind of joking in the postgame, like almost paying homage to the Big Hurt.
Somebody, you know what? Some commentator during the playoffs noted that Bregman was choked up on the bat and almost commented on it like a novel thing, and it annoyed the hell out of me.
He always does.
I know. That's why it annoyed me.
Yeah.
It was like, that's why it's annoying when the national guys come in sometimes, because they don't know these little, that's not even a little detail. You've watched Bregman play enough. It was really weird. It must have been the play-by-play guy that said it. It definitely was.
Yeah.
The color commentator wouldn't have said it. That's something he would have noticed before.
I think somebody, yeah. I think when you look at the way Alex Bregman holds the bat and you just look at Alex Bregman,
yeah,
his stats completely belie both of those things.
I know.
Right? Like, you look at him, if you put Alex Bregman in a complete lineup of other Astro players and go, pick out the guy who had 41 home runs this year.
Yeah.
How many guys do you pick in that lineup before you get to break? Like, I mean, Altuve, if you don't know anything about baseball, Altuve is probably the only guy you pick after Bregman, and that dude hit 30 home runs this year. It's crazy. Their home run per
Reddick's pretty wiry looking.
Yeah, their home run per inch of height on this team is really, really good.
Reddick's wiry, but he's taller, or he's not short like those guys are. Yeah.
Boy, he jacked that one the other day, man. That was
Skinny? Well, Kyle Tucker. If you knew Kyle Tucker, he's so skinny.
I take that back. Kyle Tucker, I would pick after both Altuve and Bregman except for hitting 41 home runs.
Except that Kyle Tucker, if he played in the 1950s, like back when Ted Williams was playing, you would look at him and say, oh, he's probably a power hitter because he's tall and lanky.
Right.
Back then it was, oh, you don't want to be too bulky. You'll get in the way of your swing.
That guy hits 382 with 41 home runs, Mackie. And then he's going to go off to the wall. For 5 years.
He's also teeing off a guy's throwing 89 miles an hour. Yeah. It's a whole different game now.
It is.
Damn squat rack, son. That kid better put some muscle on in the offseason.
Yeah, or grow some facial hair. Do something. I mean,
control over that, but there are these reports that he's got this non-urgent. You know, AJ had to talk to him about his attitude. He's not urgent enough. He didn't quite fit in the clubhouse. I don't like those kinds of reports.
No.
I was giving him the benefit of the doubt before. I thought maybe he just hadn't gone through puberty. But it turns out that, like, I'm guessing he just doesn't give a damn.
He is a somewhat crucial piece to, mark my words, if they are going to try to retain Gerrit Cole this offseason, we're going to reach the point where Jim Crane is going to want to start moving some other salaries around.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh Reddick is going to make $13 million next year. Kyle Tucker being able to be an everyday member of the lineup for 145 games would be a nice development for this team. Because Brantley's going to be out there, and Springer is going to be out there. The only other spot open is right field. If Kyle Tucker could somehow become... And it's not like Josh Reddick has set a huge bar to clear offensively. He'll be Kyle Tucker's development into a guy that AJ Hinch and the Astros can trust being a part of the everyday lineup would be a big step towards freeing up some money to maintain this super dominant pitching rotation.
You know what? Now I realize why I thought of Kyle Tucker is because what we had teased coming to the segment was the player that's annoying me. When I went back and watched the Chiefs film yet again, it's Travis Kelce, which in some ways...
Why is he annoying you? He's really good at football.
I'll make a comparison to Kyle Tucker in that when forever the debate has been about... Well, I say forever. The last few years, people have questioned whether Travis Kelce is as good as Gronkowski. And it comes down to like the same issues I have with Kyle Tucker's physique. It comes down to Travis Kelce and his complete lack of physicality, unless he's trying to get physical with the defensive back, which is what was so annoying to me. You watch these games, and for one, Gronk would line up next to an offensive tackle and block better than offensive tackles half the time. He'd get up and he'd do a man's work. Travis Kelce is out, split out wide from the formation. At times, he's down on the line, in line, and he's helping out with pass blocking or something. But he's not a physical player. And like I know that there are many great tight ends who weren't physical players.
Right.
But it annoys me when it's a guy like Travis Kelce who you feel like wants to be looked at as a hard ass and a tough guy. All he does is he initiates contact with defensive backs. Like Lonnie Johnson will be on him, or Tashaun Gibson will be on him. This is what Travis Kelce does time and time again. He charges into them, like bull rushes them, and then falls down and tries to draw penalties. That's his go-to move these days. Whenever anybody gets on him and tries to get physical with him, he's trying to draw a penalty. That is not Gronk-like.
No.
That was so far beneath anything that Gronk would ever do. Gronk would drag that defensive back 10 yards downfield, make the play, and not get a call.
If the NFL were a construction site, Gronk would be like the guy who's out there doing all the he'd have the sledgehammers.
Yeah.
He would be doing serious grunt work, be lifting things. Like, he would be the guy that would put in an honest 9-hour day on a construction site. I feel like Travis Kelce would be the guy. He'd be the guy who would have on the fluorescent vest and just sort of be walking from group to group.
He'd always
kind of just sort of check, hey, what's up,
guys? He'd always
look
really busy.
Yeah.
He'd look really busy. He'd always be like, oh, I'm on the phone. He'd be on the phone a lot without anybody
at
actually being on the phone.
Site?
He'd be faking a phone call. He'd go off and hold the phone to his ear like he was talking to the foreman or something.
And if someone walked up to him like, who are you talking to? He'd be like, I'm trying to get some of these supplies over here. I don't know if you saw, but I'm... And he would just talk until the person's like too confused or doesn't care. And like, okay, whatever. Back to your phone call.
Now, the one thing I did notice,
that I've tried these tricks before.
Yeah, I noticed this with the Texans too. And it's happened a lot with Jordan Akins and Darren Fells in a good way, is Kelce did have a couple of good runs down the sideline. And I'm watching, if there's a trend that I'm picking up on in the NFL this year, I feel like the tight end run after the catches have gotten more brutal than ever. And I don't know if it's because...
Like the collisions and things like that?
No. It's not even the collisions. It's just that when a tight end catches a ball on the perimeter, he's almost good for 7 yards and 2 broken tackles on a defensive back
because
anymore.
He's just so much bigger
just,
than
the guy. And they're just... It's like watching Grand Theft Auto. You're just mowing down pedestrians like they're nothing with no consequences or anything.
Hey, do you see...
Like,
Darren Fells is a Camaro?
Yes. Boy, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Even when Travis, like in hindsight, going back and watching the film, in hindsight, it's funny to watch knowing that the Texans won, but Lonnie Johnson just kind of bouncing off of Travis Kelce.
Right.
And these guys, these 6'6", 265-pound dudes trying to get tackled by these smaller guys. I think it's probably the one thing in sports. I've never had a dunk in a game. I've never hit a home run in an actual over a fence in a
stadium,
park.
Yeah.
We didn't have fences when I was playing Little League, so I never got to do anything like that. I would think that the greatest thrill in sports and in terms of the sheer joy of it, it's got to be catching a pass on the perimeter as a tight end and then just running over defensive backs.
Just looking up and seeing people half your size.
And mowing them down, right? Just boom. Boom, boom.
It's probably the closest thing to Pop Warner that you feel, right?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
when you were, I mean, I'm guessing you were bigger than everybody
actually,
else.
Now that I'm thinking of it, yeah, my senior year in high school was fun.
Did you play both ways?
Yeah, I played both ways, but I'm going to be honest with you kids. I was, I knew I wanted to play defense in college, and it was so easy to block guys on offense that I would just cut block guys as much as possible and just.
Did you ever injure anybody?
Well, we played both ways and all special teams. Like, I played every single, I never left the field in high school.
Wow.
I played every offensive play, every defensive play, and every single special
you
team.
You were on offensive and defensive line?
Offensive and defensive line.
You never got your hand on the ball?
Coverage, kickoff return, punt return,
wow.
All that.
Like, what did you look like running down on punt and kick coverage?
Tired. And so when you play like 150 snaps, including special teams in a game,
yeah.
Defense was fun because I remember there's games my senior year where it was like I was just tossing people, literally just picking offensive linemen up and throwing them out of the way and having like 10 tackles for a loss in a game. Because I played at like smaller schools. We weren't all that at the time.
This upstate New York.
The conference has grown since then. But yeah, it wasn't playing football in Houston.
We need that video.
Yeah.
We need the footage of you tossing people around like you're Bigfoot. My big takeaway relative to tight ends with the Texans lately, Seth, is watching Darren Fells and watching Jordan Akins. I can't believe this is the same coaching staff and decision-making group, for the most part, that had Ryan Griffin on this team for the last few years.
Yeah,
like and this is no disrespect to Ryan Griffin. He carved out a nice 7-year career for himself in the NFL.
I mean we're going to disrespect him.
I'm about to say he didn't do anything particularly well. That's all. Yeah. But even just physically how he looks, you know what I mean? Like, just you look at Darren Fells and Jordan Akins, you're like, man, okay, this is what a tight end looks
like. And if Jordan Thomas ever comes back, and Kyle Waring, too, like the whole crew.
All of them.
It's an intimidating crew.
Yes.
It's really it's a sight to behold.
Right.
There's something about just sheer size. And I'd say the offensive line that, you know, Brian Gain wanted bigger, taller guys. And there's something about that offensive line group now, too, where you look at Max Sharping and, Tytus Howard isn't actually that big.
To you, maybe.
He's not. He's like Dwayne Brown big.
Yeah.
You know, like Dwayne Brown wasn't a big, hulking Jonathan Ogden type. He was more athletic-looking guy.
No, I get what you're saying. I mean, I'm not going to walk up to either of them and say, hey, how you doing, tiny?
Laramie Tunsil's a big dude.
Yeah.
I don't even know what his official height and weight is, but he's just put together
He's a monster.
That's a massive dude that can move really well.
He is a monster.
I mean, you know, they're the class of the division. I mean, you know, they're the division champs from last year. Good in all three phases. This isn't a team where you say, well, hey, they're strong on O, and maybe, you know, this team in all three phases is strong, and there is no weakness, and they have very good personnel, good up front on both sides of the ball, good skill players, good coaches. It's not a surprise why they're in the position they're in.
Coach.
That's Frank Reich on his head coach of the Indianapolis Colts on his conference call yesterday. Not surprisingly, sprinkling a lot of sugar on his opponent this weekend, the Houston Texans.
He's just a straight shooter, buddy. He's telling it how he sees it.
How much of what he said there do you think is accurate, Seth? With specifically where he says, boy, they're good in all three phases. Are the Texans good in all three phases right now?
It depends on what's your standard for good. They're not bad. They're bad in pass defense. So
But when I look at all three phases, I'm looking at them in generalities: offense, defense, special teams. Like just looking at them going into these games.
If you're
going
to look at the DVOA, like the general rating for where these guys are, they're about middle of the road in all three.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think the offense is on the upswing.
Yes.
The offense has the potential to be a lot better than where it's currently rated. But those two stinkers, those two snoozer offensive performances are kind of weighing them
in
down
their losses,
on the average.
Yeah.
Right? And we can't ignore those. It's only been in the last few weeks that they had a couple of offensive performances that were just not great at all.
No,
so.
Can't be ignored, especially because they both happened at home.
Yeah.
You know, in games that they went into as heavy favorites in both of those games. What about defensively? How do we feel about this team right now?
I feel, it's interesting. I don't feel great about the pass defense, and then they haven't been good with pass defense, and yet I don't fear. I'm going to knock on wood as I say this now. Can you hear that?
I hear it.
I don't fear the deep strike going into this Colts game as much as I have in years past. I don't because they've done a good job of actually not letting up home runs.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a whole lot of bend but don't break. What did Abraham Lincoln say? He said something like, "Whatever you choose to be a good one." The Texans have chosen by necessity to be a bend but don't break defense, and as bend but don't break defenses go, they've done a pretty good job of it.
They have.
Now some kind of have a bend but don't break philosophy, but they also have just absolute stud cornerbacks, and they end up being really good at it. You know, you think about like the Panthers a few years ago, the Bills right now in some regards, but they're just so damn good at it. So I think that for what they're trying to do, given some of the limitations in their secondary, the Texans are okay at that.
Special teams.
Yeah, they're okay. Other than the small little problem of actually scoring points on special teams.
Yeah, making kicks.
How much does the...
it's kind of a big part
but
of
I,
special teams.
I feel good about every other part of special teams, but the actual making kicks part is an abysmal disaster. This is the interesting thing. You know how many times the Texans have punted in the last two games?
They have not punted since the first drive of the Falcons game.
They've punted once in the last two games, so the question becomes... If your punter that you got rid of your previous punter for his punting, you bring in the current one, and he might be the issue with the field goal kicking, and he's also, by the way, not punting at all.
Yeah.
Now that's going to change.
Even need a punter on this team.
But over the last 2 weeks, if those games have been close at all, then yeah, the lack of...
Anger might have been their most valuable player in that Carolina Panther game.
Look,
way he punted in that game. I hope we never need to see that again, because hopefully they're putting up, you know, 40 points, 31 points, things like that, holding the ball for 40 minutes
a
game.
We know that's not going to happen.
No, I know. Of course they're going to punt again.
Well, that's my question is, okay, a good punter, just the difference between these two punters, whatever the difference is in your actual punting, how much better does a punter need to be to make up for 4 or 5 missed points from field goals and extra points?
If it's his fault, he needs to place it on the 1 yard line like half the time.
Yeah, he's got to be pinning guys down on the 1 yard line. He's got to be booming at 50 yards.
I mean, those are actual points.
At this point, I'd rather have, if you bring in a non-punter, have him, but he's an awesome holder, have that guy. Bring in Tony Romo to hold and punt, and I bet he'd be better overall for the good of the
just
team.
Just quick kick all the time.
I shouldn't have brought up Romo as the holder. That's probably the worst case for somebody.
He probably has the most famous botch of a snap in the last 15 years, yeah.
Leckler. Well, Leckler. Leckler.
Yeah.
He's a good holder.
He is
a
good holder.
Bring him back.
Yeah.
How long would it take Leckler to get in shape?
To hold?
Yeah.
He's in shape right now.
No,
to
punt, too, because he'd have to punt.
I feel like he's a guy who's managed. I feel like he's somebody who knows how to manage being out of shape. You know what I mean? Like, there's in shape, and then there's in Leckler shape.
Yeah, but there's kicking shape, which is, that's a whole lot of stress on your hamstring. You're
a week to get the hammy stretched out. A week, that's it. This is for the division lead on Sunday, Seth. This game between the Colts and the Texans, which I think is a little surprising to some people, the Colts half of it at least. The Colts went into the season as the team with the longest odds to win the AFC South. I thought that was way off. I thought they'd still be competitive with Jacoby Brissett and with the roster they've put together, and they've been fine. They're 3-2. Their losses were overtime to the Chargers in L.A. in Week 1, and then they lost at home to the Raiders in Week 4. They, like the Texans, beat the Chiefs in Kansas City within the last couple weeks. They beat the Chiefs in Week 5. Texans beat the Chiefs in Week 6. So what are the, I guess, is this Is this what the division race is going to look like this season? These two teams play this week, and then they play again in Week 12. When they play again in Week 12, are we saying something similar about this being the battle for the division lead?
I don't know. They still, the Colts, in a lot of respects, still have to prove it to me. Mm-hmm. I think they have, they should have a better defense than they do. They, you look at them on paper, and now injuries have hurt them a little bit, and they actually beat the Chiefs when they were pretty banged up. But they haven't quite performed up to expectations defensively. They still make me very nervous, because I think a lot of that is early season between injuries and mental errors and whatnot. At some point, that's going to click for them, and certainly you could say that it clicked in the Chiefs game. I don't think the Colts will be able to get away with playing as much press man as they did versus the Chiefs. So I don't think that they're gonna shut down Deshaun Watson the way they shut down a hobbled Pat Mahomes. It's Jacoby Brissett right now, and how long can they keep going dinking and dunking and not putting a whole lot on his plate? Are they good enough to just still physically dominate teams? I don't think they are. So I think the Colts will fizzle out as the season goes along.
Okay. I think the last view Texans fans have of the Colts is that playoff game where Marlon Mack was running all over the place. Of course, Andrew Luck was the quarterback in that game. Frank Reich talked about Jacoby Brissett in his conference call yesterday and what a leader the guy is.
Yeah, I mean, what I love about Jacoby is he's the real deal. And, you know, you can't fake the kind of leadership that he brings to the table. And, you know, to be asked to come in and step in and fill the shoes of, you know, one of the league's elite players in Andrew Luck, and, you know, not only on the field, but his presence as a leader. And Jacoby's one of the few guys that can do that. You know, as a leader, this guy is, he just commands the respect of the locker room because of the person that he is, because of his toughness, because of his humility, and his confidence and his belief in who he is as a player. And you feel that when you're around him, and our guys respond to it.
Apologize for whoever was putting on their windbreaker during the conference call. The hell was that?
Shuffling through their trapper keeper.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Jacoby Brissett is 3-0 against the Houston Texans.
Yeah, remember when, you know what the biggest thing about?
Of course, two of those wins were against a non-Deshaun Watson Texans team in 2017.
The first time that he beat the Texans, I remember on Thursday Night Football.
So the first loss of the Brock Osweiler era, Seth.
It was, I remember thinking, like, well, look, at the time, people were saying, look, he can run, but he's not known for his running. Don't worry too much about that. And then he busts off.
It's a speed option to the outside.
It felt like an 80-yard.
It felt like it. What do you make of Brissett? What's the Seth Payne?
I didn't know. I think that Brissett. I think right now, this is what I worry about. Where I said I think they might fizzle him out. I think Reich is managing him well, and kind of like he did with Andrew Luck last year for injury reasons. I think that Reich is almost the opposite of Bill O'Brien in some respects, in that he very much keeps the big picture in mind. And I don't think he's as reactionary. I don't think he's as impatient. And I think he might be kind of careful with Jacoby Brissett right now, and he's kind of increasing the workload and increasing the expectations as they move along, and it's been working, you know. So he's not asking any more out of him right now until he continues to grow into this role, just like he did with Andrew Luck last year. Reich's best job as a coach last year was kind of being calm, cool, and collected enough to withstand the barrage of negativity when Andrew Luck was throwing for 4 yards per attempt. And that was was by design.
Which coincided with a lot of losing, though.
Right, right.
Like,
right.
At
that's
least
what
now
I mean.
He's doing this with Brissett, and they're 3-2. They were 1-5 to start last year.
Right, right. So, that's where, I don't know, I feel like there's a little untapped potential with Jacoby Brissett. Because we've seen him make some pretty good throws in the time, you know, when he's stepped in before. We know he has an arm. We know he's capable. You know he can run. He can do all those things. It's a matter of, all right, when are they going to really just open up the playbook?
Seth Payne, Sean Pendergast, we're breaking down or digging into, really for the first time this week, the Colts and the Texans. God, I'm going to say this, and Jonesy, mark this, because if I say this right now and the Colts end up beating the Texans this weekend, then I'm going to look back at this and go, especially because Brissett's 3-0 against the Texans. Would this matchup on Sunday have some more? How much more juice would it have if Andrew Luck had not retired? What would we be feeling about this game going into it, having just beaten the Chiefs, and now you got Andrew Luck and the Colts?
Then it's big quarterback name versus other big quarterback name. That's potentially Andrew Luck is an MVP
candidate
at that point.
It's like chapter two of last week with Mahomes and Watson.
Think about what it would have been, because what I said last week was, hey, if you want to be in the MVP discussion, and why not? It's fun. That's what we do here in Houston. We have MVP discussions because we're lucky to have some MVP
more than
candidates.
Any other city.
Right.
Yeah, no. That's an empirical fact.
Yes, yes, I realize that, well, in baseball, the championships are attached to it, but in basketball and football, not so much.
Yeah.
So if you were going to have that MVP discussion, yeah, I kind of wish Andrew Luck were still around just for that because he beat Pat Mahomes. Pat Mahomes couldn't beat the Texans when their two starting cornerbacks weren't even playing in the second half of the game. So
suck it,
that's
Mahomes.
Your MVP? No, Deshaun Watson's your MVP.
Got
at least,
right.
Well, until Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's the MVP right now. But he definitely, Deshaun took over Pat Mahomes' spot.
We need a bounty out on Russell Wilson.
If Andrew Luck were an MVP candidate and the Texans beat the Colts twice, I feel like that's another notch in Deshaun's bedpost.
It's the next step of the gauntlet is what that is, the MVP gauntlet. Yeah, so, but it's Jacoby Brissett. What scares us about the Indianapolis Colts? I think for most Texan fans, Seth, probably the first name that comes up is T.Y. Hilton. Now, T.Y. Hilton this season has been a little banged up. He's averaging 9.7 yards a catch. So he's averaging...
That's way like 5 yards below his historical average.
Yeah, which I think plays into exactly what you're talking about Frank Reich doing to kind of manage this whole non-Andrew Luck quarterback thing. And one of the fallout, or part of the fallout of that, statistically at least, is that T.Y. Hilton has not been getting downfield nearly as much. He does have 4 touchdowns on the year.
The weird thing about Jacoby Brissett is that there have been times where he wasn't playing well at all, and then all of a sudden the Texans became his get-right game. 2018, the first 7 games, he was having a bunch of 50-yard performances. He comes into Houston, though, and busts out 150 yards, 115 yards. But then, and this is the other thing that's interesting, there have been a lot of years.
Are you talking about Hilton or Brissett?
T.Y. Hilton.
Oh, okay.
Did I say Brissett?
You said Brissett, yeah.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
So, T.Y. Hilton. That's really weird.
I thought you said Brissett. Anyways, okay. T.Y. Hilton.
The other thing is that he usually, in most seasons, he'll have one good game versus the Texans and then one humdrum game. So it just becomes a matter of, all right, which game is going to be the humdrum one? Which one's going to be the really good one? Every now and then he has 2 great ones. But 2014 was the weirdest one because he had 225 yards in Houston.
Yes, I remember. That was a Thursday night game.
Then he had 50 yards at Indianapolis. More times than not, his better game of the season is in Houston instead of Indianapolis.
That's why he said it's his home away from home.
That's why last year he was wearing that clown. Remember, Jonathan Joseph, what did Jonathan Joseph say? He said it was a clown statement by T.Y. Hilton because T.Y. Hilton had called it his comfortable place to live or something.
Yes.
So T.Y. Hilton's buddy went out in Houston to one of our fine costume shops.
I think it was store over by the Kroger over there.
Judas store? Is that what we're calling it now?
Studemont, yeah.
They sold T.Y. Hilton the scary clown mask, and he wore it into the stadium, and then he went off to the tune of...
Yeah, then he proceeded to turn
199 it. Yards. We kept them below 200.
Is that what he had in the playoff game?
Yeah, just 199. Well, no, that wasn't the playoff. That was the... Was it the playoff game? Wore the, yeah. 199 was the regular season.
Okay. Well, they destroyed the Texans in the wild card game. So whether he had 199, 99, or 59, it was still a pretty good day to be an Indianapolis Colt. He's played 14 games against the Texans and has 76 catches for over 1,400 yards. So he's played almost the equivalent, T.Y. Hilton has, Seth, of a full season, a full regular season against the Texans, and is essentially putting up like Megatron-type numbers.
Yeah.
Against the Texans, he is basically a peak Megatron is what he is.
I feel, like I said, I feel better about him this year versus the Texans than in previous years, just because they've been doing a better job of not letting up the...
Even with no Roby?
Roby's... Actually, yes. In a way, I almost feel better about it with no Roby because they have to be that much more conservative and careful.
As opposed to just trusting Roby that he...
Yeah, of course, they trusted... Look, there were times in that game on Sunday where they trusted Lonnie Johnson with 0 safety help over the top so they could go over and give Philip Gaines some help. If that becomes the chief and primary goal, then you're going to weaken other parts of your defense also. I'm nervous. I'm nervous about T.Y. Hilton.
Are you surprised? Are you surprised that the Texans are an underdog in this game? They're a 1-point underdog, so it's not like they're a touchdown underdog. But I was a little surprised coming off that Chiefs game that the Texans were a little surprised that they're underdogs in this game. I'm taking them to win the game.
If you look at some of the classic things, just if you're just looking at platoon versus platoon, the Texans are converting third downs, best in the league.
Best in the league.
The Colts defense is
among the worst
in third down defense.
They're like 27th or
right.
something.
There are a few things going that the Texans have going for them. I think a lot of people collectively just are trying to figure out whether the Texans offense is for real. Because he just went against two pretty bad defenses.
Yeah.
And is this something that's going to hold up versus the good teams? Just how good are you, especially on the road, versus a Colts defense that people, I think, feel is underperforming and is actually better than some of the numbers show?
Yep, I would agree with that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.